Well, I hope you all enjoyed your bye week, and welcome back to Giants Goal Line. We begin the second half of the season. It's week 9 in the NFL. The Giants have played 8 games. They are halfway home at 5-3, which is a very good sign for them. Maybe not such a good sign if you've seen any of their second half performances over the last decade or so. But for now, be positive. They just beat the Philadelphia Eagles as well, and that was a huge win for them, snapping a 4-game losing streak against their nemesis from down the turnpike. We will revisit that and talk about where the Giants stand at the bye week, or not at the bye week, after the bye week, and also take a look at their playoff possibilities as well. And we'll look a little bit around the division and talk about some views from the outside on the Giants with Albert Breer, who is one of the finest NFL reporters around now, working for the Monday Morning Quarterback, as well as CSN New England. We'll bring him in and get his thoughts on the team and Ben McAdoo's start to his career. And we will do a whole lot more looking ahead to the next 3 games as well, which could be very big for the Giants' chances. They're really in position to make a little bit of a run. But for now, let's start where we always start, and that's with the 3 big storylines from the week. And number one, I think, is pretty obvious for anybody who saw the Giants win over the Eagles on Sunday, and that is that the defense finally is a defense that can come up big when it counts. And that's something that we did not see a lot of last season. It's really the biggest reason why the Giants were a mess last year. Obviously, they finished 6-10, and as you probably have heard, they lost 5 games, an NFL record 5 games, where they blew leads in the fourth quarter. It was the difference between 6-10 and probably a winning record. Obviously, they were in position to win 5 more games, but they just had a defense that wore down and that couldn't make the big play. And this year, they spend $200 million bringing in players like Olivier Vernon, like Damon Harrison, like Janoris Jenkins. They bring back Jason Pierre-Paul. And what a difference it makes. In the fourth quarter, the Giants, with the game really hanging in the balance, the offense stalled, and the Eagles kept getting the ball back. And they came away with 2 field goals. They punted once, and then, of course, right at the end of the game, when Eli Manning gets that, well, he called it a cheap interception. He's right. A ball basically tipped into the Eagles' hands, set them up at the 34-yard line with a minute 48 to go. They make one pass to get to the 17, and it looks like the Giants are doomed and headed for a loss. And what happens? Pressure from the Giants' defense. Steve Spagnuolo dials up some blitzes, and some great play by the secondary causes 4 straight incomplete passes. But this was a story that looked so familiar, because how many times did you see, whether it was a loss or not, but you could just see a Giant defense bending and breaking in the second half? They don't do that anymore. This defense is standing tall when it counts. They stop the run. They make the big plays. It's really because of 2 things. One is they are better personnel. And you get 3-4 top-end guys like Vernon and Harrison and Jenkins, and it moves other guys who were in leading roles last year back to secondary roles that they may now be more suited for. And when you do that and you have better guys who can do their jobs and still do the jobs late, what you get is a defensive coordinator who can call his game. Last season, Steve Spagnuolo wanted to be more aggressive, but he couldn't because he was afraid of what was in his secondary. He was afraid that even by calling blitzes, guys weren't going to get to the quarterback. Well, now he's got the confidence to dial things up. And you saw in that last game, he had a variety of defensive fronts, a variety of blitzes, and he just kept going to it. As Ben McAdoo said after the game, they kept their foot on the gas pedal the entire game long, and the end result against a rookie quarterback, they got the job done. And I think that's the difference to me. It's the whole difference with this Giants team, and while you might be a little bit more encouraged as you head into the second half, their offense I think will come around, but that defense now is just capable of holding them close, of winning these games, and all these games in this league come down to the fourth quarter. And if you can make a couple of key stops, suddenly you go from 7-9 to 9-7 in the blink of an eye. And as the Giants are proving at 5-3, they are in position to do at least that, if not more. The number 2 headline for the Giants, flipping to the other side of the ball, were some interesting tweaks on offense by Ben McAdoo. And I'm not completely sold on this being a big deal, but it certainly was a little bit of a deal. And start with this one. He benched Larry Donnell, who has just been awful in his blocking at tight end. And he had been a liability at receiver because of his drops, because of his fumbles, and because of the dangerous way he plays. As many of you know, he gets hit low and he flips, and you know, you wonder if that ball's not going to pop out. The Giants instead went with Will Tye almost half the game. They brought in rookie Jarrell Adams as well, and they even took Marshall Newhouse, made him a jumbo tight end in some of those run situations. So that was a little bit different. You saw a split at tailback, Rashad Jennings and Paul Perkins, the rookie, getting a little bit more involved. Not very effective in the run game, but at least it was a shot that McAdoo took, that maybe Perkins getting a little bit more playing time, a lot at the expense of Bobby Rainey, who disappeared from the offense. Maybe he could have got a spark. Maybe he just gets a little experience and Perkins can provide a spark down the line. I think that was an interesting choice by him. You also saw early, before Victor Cruz hurt his ankle, you saw his snaps start to diminish a little bit, and you saw more of Roger Lewis, more of Dwayne Harris. And, you know, Victor Cruz is a great story, but he had not been very effective. He's had a couple of big plays, but overall not consistent. You know, you don't see the same speed he used to have. You don't see the same wiggle and escapability. So, you know, they brought in Roger Lewis, gave him a shot. He had a couple of big drops. I don't know if this is an experiment that's going to continue. But again, Ben McAdoo trying a lot of different things. And he also had a couple of other things. Sterling Shepard, a little bit more out of the slot, a little bit more motion in the offense. And, you know, Eli Manning a little bit more under center. He had been going a lot out of the shotgun in recent weeks. So there were some tweaks, but overall, the Ben McAdoo philosophy to me did not change much. A short, quick passing game is what he prefers. He gets away from the run very, very quickly. In fact, I think it was basically a 2-to-1 ratio in pass to runs, which is pretty consistent for what he's been for most of the season. So personnel changes, yes, and I think that was a good idea. Not a lot of change in his overall philosophy, and what you saw was an offense that has basically been what it's been all year. Not great. Waits for the big play and can get them in the passing game, but in this case, good enough to get the job done as long as your defense can hold its line, especially late in the game, and protect those leads. And the number three headline for the Giants coming off the bye week, heading into their second half of the season, it's all about their playoff position. And they are certainly in good position right now. If the season ended today, they'd be the top wild card team. They'd head, depending on how things work out, it's not completely even, but it could be Minnesota, could be Seattle. Obviously, there's a lot of games still to go before a playoff position is determined, but the Giants are right in the thick of it right now. And realistically, as they head into the second half, what are their chances? Pretty good for the most part, but keep this in mind. The Giants, as a second-half team over the last decade, have been pretty atrocious. They have won in the first half almost 60% of their games. In the second half, they've lost almost 60% of their games. And I know it's a lot of turnover and a new coaching staff, but it's something to watch for them. But really, what they've established themselves in the first half is a team that is good enough to get there. You know, they may not be the New England Patriots. They might not even be the Dallas Cowboys, although I still maintain that those Cowboys are going to come back to the pack a little bit. They're not going to, you know, they had a nice 7-1 run, but they are not going to be, you know, that in the second half. Dak Prescott is going to have his rookie struggles. The Giants are in a good position to challenge them, and I think that they've proven that they're better positioned definitely than the Eagles, who, you know, Carson Wentz is starting to look a little bit more like a rookie. They've got a good future, but they've got flaws too. Maybe better than the Redskins, even though the Redskins beat the Giants. The Redskins have certainly proven to be erratic. And when you look around the rest of the NFC, it's mostly mediocrity. And if you're right in the hunt and you've got the capabilities the Giants do, there's no reason why you can't make that kind of run. And what the Giants have going for them, they have that defense now. You know, last year, again, so many close games. Now they can turn the tide by making the stops when they need it. And They've got Eli Manning, and he's not having his finest season. There's no doubt about that, but he is a guy who has come up in big spots before. I think his best football is yet to come this season. When you've got a combination like Eli Manning and Odell Beckham, there's really no reason why you can't be an explosive offense. So, you know, I find it hard to believe that they won't break out of their shell at some point. It would be nice if they had a running game, and that is the missing ingredient between them and being a true championship contender, a team that can win on the road in the playoffs. I don't know that they're there yet, but at this point, you know, I think I picked them to be in the playoffs at the end of the season, 9-7. I don't see any reason to change that, because when you look around the league, they are as good as just about anybody, especially in the NFC, and they've got a very favorable schedule coming up over the next few weeks. We'll get into that in a little bit, but they are primed to give themselves a little bit of a cushion, and they should be in the playoffs come the end of the season. Those are the three headlines for the Giants after 8 weeks of the season, again, 5-3. Now let's take a little step back and get in somebody who can take a look at the Giants from the outside and maybe give us a little perspective on how they compare to the rest of the league, what this division looks like, how the Cowboys are built maybe to last, maybe not. And so let's bring in Albert Breer, a good friend of mine who is the senior reporter over at the Monday Morning Quarterback or TheMMQB.com. He's also an NFL analyst up at CSN in New England and really just one of the finest NFL reporters going. Albert, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
You got it, Ralph. I'm great.
Well, we really appreciate having you on Giants Goal Line here. And we were obviously just talking about the Giants. So not, maybe not surprising 5-3 start, but certainly some surprising aspects of it. From your outside perspective and covering the league, are you surprised by how the Giants have played so far?
You know, I was pretty critical, Ralph, of their moves in the offseason. And I understand it. You know, a lot of people get excited over things that happen in March. My attitude always has been those sorts of things that you got to wait and see, because generally in the NFL, I don't think you can pay to fix problems. You know, it's just more often than not, you know, going into unrestricted free agency and paying guys at the top of the market isn't a great way to build a team. And yet, you know, I think that the Giants, maybe not to the level of, like, say, the Broncos did a couple of years ago when they brought in Tlaib and Ward, DeMarcus Ware. But, you know, the moves have worked out, you know, and I think we knew that they were they had potential on offense. With Eli and with the resources they poured into the offensive line, I know that had brought results, but they certainly poured enough resources there, poured enough resources into that area, and you know, Odell Beckham obviously being what he is, the question marks were all on defense, you know, and so I think you got to give them a lot of credit for not only the investment in the defense that they made in the offseason, but the fact that you know it looks like those moves have made a big difference. You know, and I think in my time covering the league, at least, you know, 9 times out of 10, that isn't the case. 9 times out of 10, when teams make a big splash in free agency, it winds up blowing up in their face. And certainly, you know, you look at what the Giants have done, and that's not the case here.
Yeah, you know, I thought the same thing when they did it, because I'm with you. It almost never works. But the difference with this, I think, was that they were starting from so low. I mean, they were historically bad last year. It was a difference just to get NFL quality players in some of those spots.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the things that they'd probably tell you is the type of guys that they brought in. Now, look, I mean, Janoris Jenkins is never going to be the type of guy that, you know, you're going to build the culture of a team around. But he loves football, and it matters to him. And so, you know, there's that. And then Olivier Vernon is that type of guy. And Snacks Harrison has been that type of guy for the Jets. And so, you know, I think big part of getting it right for them was just, I think it's just the type of guy they brought in, you know, like that they took the time to go in and look at it and say, okay, like where can we, you know, where can we find some help out there where it's not going to be as high risk as it normally is? Because, you know, I think one of the things you have to look at in a lot of these cases is why the other team's letting them go. And generally what you'll find is that there's something there where, you know, they weren't quite, the other team wasn't quite comfortable with who the guy was. And so, you know, they let them go. And a lot of times those problems wind up manifesting with the next team. You know, like Ndamukong Suh, obviously, you know, part of the problem there was logistical with the franchise tag, but it was also, you know, that he had the other issues in Detroit. And I think you saw some of that manifest itself over the course of his first year and a half in Miami. And so, you know, I think that they deserve credit for kind of having a handle on who those guys were and why maybe some of the things that the catch teams in unrestricted free agency they wouldn't be as susceptible to.
What's interesting is that, you know, the way I think you want to build a team is exactly the way the Dallas Cowboys have done it. You know, draft an offensive lineman, sticking with your own guys. And, of course, now that's the team that the Giants are trying to chase by throwing all their money around. When you look at the two teams, you know, I've been saying all along that it's only a matter of time before the Cowboys come back to the pack because that's what rookie quarterbacks do. But it hasn't happened yet. I mean, do you think the Giants can mount a legitimate chase at the Cowboys, or are the Cowboys just that good?
Yeah, and I wouldn't count the Redskins out either. You know, I know it's easy to forget them because they didn't play this week. But, I think that the Redskins still, like, even, you know, even with some of the ups and downs they have, I think the Redskins probably still have the most well-rounded roster. Like, you know, they're the least places to poke holes, I think, with them. But, yeah, I mean, Dallas is so outstanding up front. And, obviously, Zeke Elliott's been such a monster for them. And, you know, Dez Bryant, even when he's not filling up the stat sheet, he didn't yesterday, even when he's not filling up the stat sheet, you know, he's still somebody who's going to create opportunities for everyone else, you know. And so on offense, I think you've dropped the quarterback into a great environment. You know, like that's truly an environment for a rookie quarterback to succeed. And the question with the Cowboys is going to be whether or not they've got enough on defense. Because I'll tell you, if you had to pick an assistant coach of the year right now, I think Rod Marinelli would get it. They didn't have great talent on that side of the ball coming into the year with everything intact. And then Rondo McClain gets suspended, and Randy Gregory gets suspended, and Marcus Lawrence gets suspended. And, obviously they make the play last week for Shelton Richardson. My question is whether or not what they're doing on defense is sustainable. I think that they can make it work with Dak or Tony, no matter who's the quarterback on offense, because the talent around the quarterback is so great. I think the biggest question for them is whether or not what they've been able to do on defense, which, again, Marinelli's done a great job, is sustainable, because I'm just not sure that they have the horses on that side of the ball.
I'm glad you didn't leave out the Redskins, by the way, because that was my preseason pick to win the NFC East, and I've been trying
to
lay low on that one.
Me too, and I think that they say, hey, remember, they were, what, 5-7 last year, and they ripped off 4 in a row. So a lot of times I think that the crap that we say in September and October means nothing anyway. Yeah.
No question about that.
Yeah.
All right, so the Giants have had a successful first half, no matter how you measure it. And I don't know that they could have asked for more out of Ben McAdoo replacing Tom Coughlin. Certainly, the Sharks in New York would have been circling if this had been 3-5 instead of 5-3. When you look at his overall body of work and how he handled the team, you know, he had the whole Josh Brown mess. He had an offensive lineman shove a reporter. I mean, there's been a lot of fire for him to try to put out. Have you been impressed with what Ben McAdoo's done so far?
Well, I think we have to see the final result. You know, like let's get to the end of the year and make sure things are still running as smoothly as they are now. But I certainly think that if you look at it, I mean, look, I was plenty critical of Odell Beckham, you know, and I think Odell Beckham deserves criticism for it. And he didn't outwardly come down on Beckham, for a while that situation was going on. Obviously, the Josh Brown thing is something that, you know, I think is, you know, one of those once in every 5 or 10 years type of situations for any head coach. It doesn't come around every day. I think you look at everything that's gone on with the team, the fact that they had to go to London in the middle of all of that, and I think you got to give him credit. You know, he's done a nice job of handling all of that stuff, because that's really what the job is. You know, it's funny because we all, you know, the way we all pick our head coaches for next year, the year after that, you know, we just look at who's got the best offense, and let's, you know, take the coordinator from that team, or let's, who's got the best defense, and let's take the coordinator for that team. But that's not really the job, you know. I mean, it can be part of the job, but it's not really. The job is really managing people and managing crises and having all of this stuff that wouldn't previously have come across your desk coming across your desk. And, you know, the fact that the Giants are now 5-3 and that they handle all the off-field stuff, they handle the on-field distractions with Odell, and they even handle a rough patch where it looked like, you know, things were kind of starting to come undone a little bit. they were able to kind of reel everything back in, you know, during that trip to London, and then follow up with a big win in a division game on Sunday, I think speaks to the job that McAdoo's done. Now, again, it's a long season. You know, the wheels can still come off, but if you just want to judge him based on what we've seen to this point, I think you got to give credit.
Now he has done a good job of blocking out the noise from the team, but, you know, we've focused on that a lot here, and, of course, a lot of it had to do with Josh Brown. I know you wrote about this at the Monday Morning Quarterback as well. You know, I think we can all agree that the Giants mishandled this, but that seems to be a theme in the NFL. Do you have a sense of why they can't? And I get it's a complicated issue, but they really seem to be the Keystone Cops sometimes when they're trying to handle this.
I think it's actually pretty simple. I think a lot of it boils down to the fact that there are, if you look at almost every level of the league, the people in positions of power are lawyers and PR people, right? So what are those people trained to do? They're not trained to get out in front of things. They're trained to react. Like when a bomb goes off somewhere, those are the people that are coming in to clean up the mess, you know? And so I think in a lot of ways it's kind of become what the league office is that, you know, these problems happen. And the shame of it is, like, what should govern all of us in these situations is a sense of right or wrong. Like, that little thing should go off in the back of your head. Hey, we're doing the wrong thing here. And I can't believe over all those months in the off season that bell didn't go off in someone's head. You know, like, this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing it this way. But, I think too often it's just when they're presented with a problem, it's not, like, let's do what's right here. You know, and that little thing that mom and dad gave us when we were 5 years old, like, If this seems like it's wrong, you know, and our whole sense of right and wrong, we should do something. It's more, all right, here's a problem. How do we manage it? You know, because I think that's kind of like who the league office, that's what the league office has become, you know. And so to me, it's the same thing as the Ray Rice thing where, you know, a problem happens. The league figures, okay, here's what's happening. The league works with the team. A punishment is almost agreed upon, you know, in that situation. And then the hope is that another shoe won't drop. And then when the other shoe does drop, what is it? Okay, well, now we're going to go all the way in the other direction. And it's just, to me, it's like Ralph, the problem is that so much of it's based on public perception, public outcry, and just the fact that, you know, they didn't let right or wrong govern them on the front end of the process. And, you know, I'm hopeful that it's – I was hopeful after the Ray Rice thing that would be something that'd be cleaned up going forward with the strength of the domestic violence policy and everything else. But I think the Josh Brown thing certainly shows us they've got a ways to go.
Well, you know what? They'll get a lot of practice out of it because you know there'll be another one around the corner. There always seems to be something. Albert, great job. Thank you so much for this interview and for your perspective on the league. I really appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Ralph.
That was Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback, which is part of SI.com. You can read all his stuff at themmqb.com and watch his stuff and listen to it as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Albert Breer. And if you're up in the New England area, he's the NFL analyst for CSN New England as well. Really one of the finest NFL reporters out there today. And he's exactly right, and I've said this before, and I think it's a fair criticism of the league. They don't necessarily think when it comes to domestic violence or any off-field issues, they don't think about what's right and wrong. They think about what can we get away with, how can we minimize the damage, what are people going to find out, what are they not going to find out. And it was the bottom line on this Josh Brown thing, I'll keep going back to it, that they issued a one-paragraph statement in August saying that he had been suspended, gave no explanation. And if it wasn't for media uncovering things, we wouldn't have known anything. And they would have happily let Josh Brown continue as kicker of the Giants, even though they had a pretty good idea and may have known everything about what he did. But as we just discussed with Albert Breer, that's one of the many fires that Ben McAdoo has had to put out this season in his debut with the Giants. And the team is 5-3. It has not fallen apart. There are no signs of trouble in the locker room. I think players have appreciated how he's tried to shield them from the Josh Brown stuff, how he dealt with Odell Beckham. I know people were a little up in arms that he had some public criticisms of Odell Beckham, but I don't think Odell was hurt by it. I think the players understood it. A message may have gotten across. I think the team genuinely likes him, and maybe most importantly, they're winning, which brings me to the final thing we're going to talk about here, and that's they got to keep winning, and they have a great chance to do it because this is what the Giants have in front of them right now, a Monday night game coming up next weekend against Cincinnati. They're just 3-4-1 at home. After that, a short week for a home game against the 2-6 Bears. Then they go on the road to the Cleveland Browns, who are 0-9. And then they've got a difficult game at Pittsburgh on December 4th. But the Steelers at 4-4 are looking very beatable. We'll hold off on that game because I still think they're going to get their gear going at some point. But for now, leading into December, the Giants have three very winnable games. And you've got to think, at a minimum, they can go 2-1, if not 3-0, and give themselves 7 or 8 wins as they begin a critical stretch in December. That would just about seal a playoff berth for them. And this is the kind of thing that the Giants of previous years have not been able to do. When there's an opportunity at the start of the second half, they've been unable to take advantage of it. And I gave you the numbers earlier. Since Eli Manning was drafted, and I guess that would be the entire Tom Coughlin era as well, the Giants were 67-37 in the first half of seasons, 40-56 in second halves. It's just a dismal display of teams wearing down and, again, unable to have that killer instinct. How many years did you talk about a killer instinct with them? And granted, in two of those years in the second half, they rebounded late and pulled it together in time to go on a Super Bowl run, and that certainly counts. But more often than not, they were in a chance to make a playoff run and just couldn't put it together. And that's what they need to do this time. I think they have the defense to do it. I believe the offense is there someplace, but maybe more importantly, the schedule just sets up so perfectly for them. There's no excuse. If they go 1-2 and end up at 6-5 heading into December, that's just an absolute disgrace. They can make this run, and there should be no reason why they don't begin December thinking, hey, maybe they beat the Cowboys in December and they make a run at the division title. You know, maybe they do a little bit more than just squeaking into the playoffs as a wild card. It's all right there in front of them. And I actually think they've got a chance to win their next three and extend their winning streak to 6. Chances are they'll stumble somewhere along the line, but you know, 2-1 is an absolute must for this team. The big one, of course, is next Monday night against the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll have that completely covered for you in our next edition of Giants Goal Line. Of course, you can follow everything about the Giants this week and from that game by clicking over to sny.tv/Giants or snygiants.com. My thanks once again to Albert Breer, the NFL writer, analyst, reporter for the Monday Morning Quarterback and for CSN New England. Thanks to our producer, Jason Pateri, and of course to Adam Schaefer as well for helping me put together this podcast. Make sure, again, you stick around all week, follow all the Giants coverage, and we will see you right back here next week on the next edition of Giants Goal Line.
This has been Giants Goal Line, part of the SNY.TV audio network.